Our next speaker and our final speaker is Dr. Sammy Gottlieb, who received her medical degree from the University of California at San Francisco. Dr. Gottlieb is an internist by training and came to CDC as an EIS officer, an epidemic intelligence service officer, about 7 years ago, and is currently a medical officer with the Division of STD Prevention at CDC. Today, Dr. Gottlieb is going to be speaking with us about an ongoing project going in North Carolina communities. And please join me in welcoming Dr. Gottlieb.
Good afternoon for the last talk of the day. As you know, HPV vaccine holds great promise for reducing the burden of cervical cancer and other HPV-related disease in the United States and is recommended for routine use in 11 and 12-year-old girls. HPV vaccine will be especially important in communities with the highest cervical cancer rates. There are large racial disparities in cervical cancer rates, with Black and Hispanic women disproportionately affected. And the highest rates often occur in medically underserved areas. Little is known about HPV vaccine uptake in these communities, and adolescents with the greatest need for HPV vaccine may be the least likely to receive it. Our objective was to assess HPV vaccine uptake and potential barriers to vaccination in an area with elevated cervical cancer rates. We conducted a survey of parents and guardians of 10 to 18-year-old girls in 5 North Carolina counties. The study counties are shown in pink on this map. County inclusion criteria were cervical cancer incidence rates greater than 10 cases per 100,000 women and cervical cancer mortality rates greater than 4 deaths per 100,000, both of which are substantially higher than the national average. Eligible counties also had at least 20% African American residents. The 5 study counties were randomly selected from a group of eligible counties that clustered in the same mostly rural region of southeastern North Carolina. During the summer of 2007, which was a little over a year after HPV vaccine was licensed, and about 6 months after publicly funded vaccine became available in North Carolina through the VFC program, we conducted telephone interviews with a stratified random probability sample of county households. We selected parents with a 10 to 18-year-old daughter and oversampled in predominantly African American and rural areas. Interviews contained questions on HPV vaccine uptake, main reasons for not vaccinating, and intentions to vaccinate daughters. After brief information about what HPV vaccine is, parents were asked, "Has your daughter had any shots of HPV vaccine?" After some brief additional information about recommendations for its use, parents were asked, "How likely are you to get your daughter the HPV vaccine in the next year?" All of the estimates I'll present are weighted to incorporate the study design and sampling methods. Overall, 889 parents were interviewed, 73% of those eligible. This sample represented a population of parents with a mean age of 41 years. 38% reported their race or ethnicity as Black or African American, and 5% as Hispanic. The mean age of the daughters was 14 years. Despite being considered underserved with respect to cervical cancer rates, 92% of parents reported their daughters had seen a healthcare provider in the past year, and 83% reported that their daughter had had a preventive care visit, such as a physical or checkup, in the last year. According to the parents' reports, a healthcare provider had recommended HPV vaccine for 21% of daughters. This slide shows the percentage of daughters who had received at least one dose of HPV vaccine out of 886 who had this information. Overall, 10.3% of the parents reported that their daughters had received at least one dose. Looking at this by the daughter's age group, only 6.4% of the 10 to 12-year-old daughters had received HPV vaccine, whereas 17.5% of 16 to 18-year-old daughters had received it, a significant threefold difference. Among whites, the percentage of vaccinated daughters was 10.3%. It was slightly higher among blacks, 12.5%, but these figures were not significantly different. Although the numbers of parents of Hispanic ethnicity were relatively small, very few appeared to have vaccinated daughters, a significantly lower percentage than either non-Hispanic whites or blacks. This slide shows HPV vaccine uptake by the daughter's health insurance status and whether a healthcare provider had recommended HPV vaccine. Those with public insurance only, that is Medicaid or the state children's health insurance program, had vaccine initiation of 16.1% versus 9% among those with private insurance, though this difference was not statistically significant. Among those who had been recommended HPV vaccine by a healthcare provider, 34% had initiated it. Only two factors were independently associated with HPV vaccine initiation in a multivariate model. First, age group of the daughter. 16 to 18-year-old daughters were significantly more likely than 10 to 12-year-olds to have initiated HPV vaccine. Secondly, a healthcare provider's recommendation was also strongly associated with HPV vaccine initiation. 40% of vaccinated daughters had received the vaccine from a pediatrician's office, 23% from a family practitioner, and 19% from an obstetrician-gynecologist. Another 10% of parents stated only that their daughter got HPV vaccine at a public clinic and 8% at a military facility. The majority, 60%, did not have any out-of-pocket costs when they got the first dose of vaccine. 35% paid less than $100, and only 4% paid close to the full $120 wholesale cost per dose. Now turning to the parents of unvaccinated daughters, this slide shows the main reasons parents reported for their daughters not having received HPV vaccine. We had this information for 780 parents. The most commonly cited reason was needing more information about the vaccine, reported by 22% of parents. An additional 15% reported that they had never heard of HPV vaccine or were not aware their daughter could get it. Another commonly cited reason for not vaccinating was feeling the daughter was too young for vaccine, reported by 16% of parents. It's important to note that this figure varied by the age group of the daughter. Only 3% of parents of 16 to 18-year-olds cited this as a reason, but 27% of parents of 11 to 12-year-olds did. An additional 13% of parents reported that they had not vaccinated their daughter because she was not having sex yet. 13% of parents reported they just hadn't been to the doctor yet or hadn't gotten around to it. Important to note that few parents reported cost, insurance issues, or vaccine safety concerns as main reasons for not vaccinating. And only 0.5% of parents cited a concern that HPV vaccine may make a teenage girl more likely to have sex as a main reason for not vaccinating. Among caregivers with unvaccinated daughters, 62% reported that their daughters probably or definitely will get HPV vaccine in the next year. Only 10% reported that their daughters definitely won't get it in the next year. There were no significant differences in intentions to vaccinate by age group of daughter, despite the notable differences in HPV vaccine initiation. And there were also no significant differences by race ethnicity. 67% of blacks and 58% of whites intended to vaccinate their daughters in the next year. Although few of their daughters had been vaccinated, 66% of Hispanics and others had intentions to vaccinate. This study had several limitations that need to be kept in mind. First, because we focused on an area with elevated cervical cancer rates in the southeastern United States, findings from our study may not be generalizable to other populations. Second, vaccination status, along with other variables, such as whether the daughter had been to a healthcare provider in the past year, were reported by the parent and not confirmed by medical record review, so there may have been some recall and misclassification errors. Finally, as our survey was done relatively soon after the vaccine became available, HPV vaccine initiation in this at-risk community is likely to still be evolving. The vaccine coverage I've discussed today may not reflect current coverage. We have recently completed a follow-up survey to these initial interviews that were done about 15 months after the initial interviews to determine uptake of HPV vaccine over time and predictors of uptake. These data will be presented at the APHA meeting in the fall and should provide additional information on HPV vaccine coverage in this community. To summarize, in this at-risk population with elevated cervical cancer rates, only 10% of parents reported their 10 to 18-year-old daughters had initiated HPV vaccine, about 1 year after HPV vaccine was licensed and 6 months after publicly funded VFC vaccine became available in North Carolina. HPV vaccine initiation varied by the age group of the daughter, with older daughters much more likely to have initiated vaccine than younger daughters. We observed no black-white racial disparities in HPV vaccine uptake. And the main reasons reported for daughters not having been vaccinated revolved around two things. First, not being aware of the vaccine or needing more information about it. And second, feeling the daughter was too young or was not having sex yet. Despite the relatively low level of HPV vaccine initiation in this population, the majority of parents with unvaccinated daughters intended for them to be vaccinated in the next year. Vaccine coverage with at least one dose of HPV vaccine in this at-risk population was substantially lower than the approximately 25% vaccine coverage found in population-based assessments in the U.S. and in California, the 2007 National Immunization Survey teen that we just heard about, and the California Health Interview Survey. NIS teen collected data in the fourth quarter of 2007 and overlapped with our survey only in its first month. And the California study had data collection into early 2008. HPV vaccine initiation is likely to be increasing over time, but the differences between our findings and those of other studies are concerning. To have the greatest impact on disease prevention, vaccination rates will need to be optimized in communities with the greatest rates of cervical cancer. Differential HPV vaccine uptake by age group may reflect a desire to provide catch-up vaccination for older teens as soon as possible, since this was relatively early after vaccine rollout, since these girls are closest to the risk of HPV infection and may still be in the age range covered by the VFC program. On the other hand, it may reflect a perception that the vaccine is not yet needed in younger teens. The latter perception appears to be playing at least a contributory role, because over one quarter of parents of 11 to 12-year-olds, the age group recommended for routine vaccination by ACIP, reported that the main reason they had not vaccinated was because their daughters were too young. HPV vaccine is most efficacious in those who have never had HPV infection, and HPV is acquired rapidly following sexual debut. In addition, parents typically underestimate whether their daughters are sexually active and fail to predict the timing of their daughter's sexual initiation. So it's critical that parents and providers are educated about the need to follow ACIP guidelines to maximize the benefits of vaccination. The lack of racial disparities in HPV vaccine initiation that we observed was definitely encouraging, given existing large black-white racial disparities in cervical cancer. HPV vaccine could really help close those racial gaps, and we need to continue to work toward making that a reality. And finally, the main barriers reported by parents in our population, such as needing more information about HPV vaccine and being concerned that their daughters are too young, can be overcome with information and education of both parents and healthcare providers in these communities. Most parents with unvaccinated daughters, regardless of their age, intended for them to be vaccinated in the next year. To have the greatest impact on cervical cancer and other HPV-related disease, additional efforts are needed in communities with elevated cervical cancer rates to ensure that intentions to vaccinate translate into HPV vaccination. This study was carried out as part of the Carolina HPV Immunization and Measurement Project, an evaluation project, or CHIME, that's led by Noel Brewer at UNC, and I'd like to acknowledge him and our other collaborators here. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Gottlieb, and also to our other speakers very much, and to the audience for your attention. It is getting late. I know everybody's kind of sleepy, but if anyone has any questions, please feel free to now proceed to the microphone, and please let us know your name and state your professional affiliation. Well, then I'll take the opportunity to,
I'll keep it really short. My name's Ann Bailowitz. I'm a pediatrician and head of child health at the City Health Department of Baltimore, Maryland. We've got very similar numbers to what I've been hearing, approximately a 20-25% initiation rate in the public sector and a completion rate of about 7-8%, nowhere near what we'd like to see it. You know, obviously a main item of attention for us is how to improve things in the public sector. And our population is three-quarters plus African-American. So I'm wondering if we can zero in a little bit on what happens after folks may start in the public sector and then be lost to follow-up. Our assumption is a hopeful one in that they connect with a medical home in the private sector and then complete the series there for the second and third doses. I was just wondering if there was some information available from anyone on the panel to either support that or expand, you know, the thinking around that.
So, we found in our study that the majority of the subsequent doses were being given at immunization-only visits, which were not a visit that occurred in the setting where a provider was there. So I think that might speak to one way that we could potentially use some type of alternative venue for providing subsequent doses, which might not necessarily detract from what's already going on in the medical home. I think there's a lot of people who, myself included, who are interested in using the HPV vaccination series as a way to strengthen the medical home model of providing care. But I think what we found, at least in our setting, is that it'll take a lot to do that, since the girls that are getting completely vaccinated are not they're doing it in their medical home, but not necessarily with their medical provider. So I think that type of model could be extrapolated relatively easily to other settings, where you might initiate vaccination with your doctor and then complete the series at your school, for example.
Okay. I'm just a little bit confused because they're starting with us and then they're going elsewhere. So, it's unclear if they have, like, maybe multiple medical homes, because we don't think they're getting it in the school venue to any great extent.
To what extent locally are you using an immunization information system?
Oh, well, we have a robust registry. We call it BIRP, the Baltimore Immunization Registry Program. And we are, ideally, we'd like to sort of track those kids. We haven't been able to yet using the registry.
And what percentage, roughly, of private providers do you think participate in your system?
The reporting is pretty good. It's typically between 85 and 92%.
So that sounds really strong. So it may be that the problem there is that they aren't moving on for subsequent doses. It sounds like if you've got a strong immunization information system and you believe that your participation is high and you're not seeing, the data showing completion, then maybe they're initiating in the public side and unfortunately not completing. So,
Yeah, the other factor we're thinking about, because we've been doing some phone calling, is that they just leave the city and they move into another location.
And that may also be a factor. Thank you.
I'm Matt Daly from the University of Colorado, and thanks for all three of the wonderful presentations. I have a question that I think is going to be spoken to either by the NIS teen data or by the University of Michigan data, that it seems like, to paraphrase, to achieve high population coverage, initiation is more of an issue than series completion. And so from either the NIS teen data or from the University of Michigan data, do we have a sense about what the natural history is of folks who don't initiate? Do they eventually initiate at some point a year later, and then we can get them immunized or not? And maybe, Sammy, you can address that too, but thank you.
With respect to the NIS teen, we don't have enough data at this time to really talk about whether the folks, that's something that we can look at when we get more data, and we're looking over time to see if they actually do eventually initiate, and then also for those that do initiate, predictors of series completion. Those are two studies that are planned for when we get more data, but right now there's not sufficient data to address those questions.
Yeah, similar with our study. I think we probably could figure out a way to link data and follow those girls over time, but we're talking about 10,000 individual people, so right now we don't have our study set up in the way that we're planning on following individuals longitudinally to see if the ones who aren't vaccinated, or at least initiating the series, whether or not they continue to do so.
Well, I'd like to take the moderator's prerogative to ask a question of Dr. Dempsey, and one of the things that I find myself wondering is to what extent you've had an opportunity to follow up with the different providers and share your results and to what extent practice patterns may have changed.
Mm-hmm. We've shared our results to some extent with some colleagues and collaborators in both the family medicine and the OB-GYN settings. And it's interesting that every, you know, we're in a big university and we don't talk to each other that much. So it's interesting, each group has sort of independently come up with their own sort of plans to try to improve their vaccination rates. So for example, in family medicine, they're doing an electronic prompt on their medical record that's only available within family medicine to get them to achieve higher vaccination rates. OBGYN has been pretty proactive about HPV vaccination, where they're setting up sort of vaccination stations within their clinics and a telephone hotline to be able to contact your insurance company to see if you have coverage. So I don't think that any of those activities were spurred on by our results, but I'm certainly encouraged by the fact that, you know, there's at least a motivation there.
And Dr. Gottlieb, I'm also wondering, you know, to what extent do you think that the residents of rural North Carolina, where your study's being conducted, are aware of the comparatively high incidence of cervical cancer that has been observed there?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't really know. We asked questions about their knowledge about it was striking that the vast majority of them had heard of HPV vaccine before. 80% had heard of HPV vaccine before the survey. We didn't ask if they knew specifically in their counties whether they were aware that they had higher than average cervical cancer rates. It wasn't exactly clear in questions about whether they felt their daughters were at risk for HPV. If they knew that they were at particularly high risk of HPV, not a lot of parents knew that their daughters, as all daughters across the country, are at high risk of HPV, but we didn't ask about questions about risk of cervical cancer specific to their community.
And are there any plans to educate the community about that increased risk, as far as you know?
Yeah, well, actually, in talking about the study, when we talked to a lot of the local health departments, some of them weren't aware of the kind of higher than average cervical cancer rate. So this was definitely something that they were interested in incorporating into some of their messages.
Okay, that's great. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Molinari, I'm wondering if you might want to share with the audience, in addition to the larger sample size, what we can expect from the new NIS data that'll be available soon for 2008, particularly with respect to the state-based estimates.
That's right. For the NIS teen was first conducted in the fourth quarter of 2006 and then again in fourth quarter 2007. Beginning in 2008, NIS teen was being conducted for all four quarters, and so 2008 will be the first time that we have reliable state-based estimates for the adolescent schedule. So when hopefully in June or July when we get the data, I'm going to jump on it and start, you know, crunching numbers. And of course the first things that we'll be rolling out will be those state-based estimates of the vaccine schedule for adolescents.